Hello, everyone. Joshua Gilliland here, one of the founding attorneys of the Legal Geeks. And with me is Nori Ely, my go-to lawyer for kaiju-related podcasts and adventures. Nori, how are you doing?
Doing pretty well. There's no lockdown here in D.C. yet, but I've been self-isolating for a few weeks just to try to be a good citizen. But so far, so good. I live right by the National Mall, so I can still go for walks.
That's handy, and especially if tanks start going through, like microphones. But you know, we digress there. So going back, Nori and I, we did a panel at Denver Pop Culture Con, and we got a kaiju panel. And I thought, like, hey, you know, who wants to do this? And Nori volunteered, and like went gangbusters. Into the world of kaiju, and it was like so awesome seeing someone like, I haven't watched Godzilla before, but boom, I'm in.
And yeah, I'm a little bit younger than having been around in the 50s and 60s, as are you, I think, to have watched this stuff.
Yeah, I was at the born at the end of the Showa era, but that's beside the point. But I've discovered Ultraman, and friends of mine have said, you would love Ultra Q, you would love Ultraman. Well, since we're sheltering in place and suddenly have free time, I decided, well, let's give this Ultra thing a try. And my God, I love it. And I pinged Nori about it, and she warmly embraced it as well. So
it's fantastic. It's definitely a good feel-good show right now in a time when we really could use some more of that, so.
It's downright endearing. And we decided to pick a topic that's kind of timely from Ultraman. So we're going to talk about the terrifying cosmic rays, which you could say is like a virus. And because there's some shelter in place elements that happened in the story. And that wouldn't be an uncommon phenomenon if you live in a country where there's, you know, random kaiju attacks. That, what are you going to do? You don't go outside if it's kaiju season.
Random, well, but regular. By this point in the show, they seem to be quite used to it.
Again? Yeah. The fact that the kids are excited about it, it highlights, like, oh, it happens that frequently.
Yeah.
The fact that you've created the science patrol and it's their job to go fight kaiju for the prosperity of man, yeah, that's a big flag. That things aren't going well. So, but again,
the one sentence background for this, also for anyone who hasn't seen it but is still watching this because they're interested in the shelter in place, is that in this particular episode, there are cosmic rays that come down, rare random cosmic rays that come down and cause outdoor drawings of kaiju to come to life and become giant, living, breathing, rampaging monsters.
Yes, and we're going to use the word rampage quite liberally.
as will be discussed.
Because I do love this kaiju. It's like he's my type of monster. But we open up with these kids, and like they all wear short shorts and baseball caps. So we do have that, you know, we check that box for kaiju related stories. And they like, it starts with them in school, and like they've all drawn pictures on the wall, and it's kind of this who's who of creatures that have been in an Ultra Q, an Ultraman, because kids dig it. Well, one kid, you know, he drew a picture of his kaiju, and it's a Gravidon, and he kind of looks like a big tadpole, and they kind of mock him, so he trespasses in a big like construction yard that have all these, you know, earth laden pipes in them, and he draws his you know, monster on the pipe, and then the thing comes to life the next day and shenanigans ensue. So there's a lot to unpack with that, and like this happens multiple times because, you know, they go back with his buddies. And like they enhance the drawing so that way when version 2 of the kaiju comes to life, he looks cooler.
While also encouraging him to undertake more violent activities.
Yeah. Like, so there's, again, we're going to talk about parental liability here. because Junior and Frith, I don't know if they just have some pent up stress or what, but you know, they're encouraging him, like, we want you to try harder. It's like, it sounds really nurturing. It's like, don't stress yourself, but try harder. And it's like, oh, that's adorable yet horrifying at the same time, because of
the cool things they wanted him to do were knock over buildings probably with people in them. So
it's like the children have empathy and they're they're learning to collaborate, and there's teamwork, and they're coming
together.
There's
definitely teamwork.
There's wonderful common cause that's happening. So it's like, okay, that's really, really sweet and cute, but they want to make a monster that's going to go rampage, and that's bad. So yeah. Now the guy who, I guess, lives in the construction yard.
That's what it appears to be, yes.
He, in the different interactions with the youth, it's like, one, the kids are trespassing. It's like they are intentionally entering a place that's not theirs for playtime. And like, that's not a place for kids to play. So big boo-boo right there. But so he yells at the kids, which again is kind of like normal in society of, you kids get out of there. Like, that's normal. Yeah.
It's the get off my lawn type stuff. This one happens to be a hazardous construction yard, so he has more reason to tell them to get out, but still.
It then escalates, like when they come back, he like grabs them by the collar. It's like, ooh, I'm not comfortable with crossing into battery of a child. So even if the kid's trespassing, like he looks really angry. And
although he is supposedly going to force them to clean it up, which is perhaps better than trying to bring this to the attention of law enforcement, but I agree with you.
Yeah, it's like, as soon as you cross
into the border, where you call the parents.
As soon as there's like corporal punishment involved, it's like, that's not your kid, dude. No. We then get, he throws like a liquid at them. So like, it's a, like he has a bucket and like throws it.
I assumed it was water.
I hope it was just soapy water.
Yeah.
And not like fish guts or something like that. I guess this is where I butchered eel or something weird. The kids clearly trespass. They're clearly, you know, vandalizing these pipes, even though it's graffiti that can, with chalk, that can get washed off. So it's not like spray paint. So it's not as bad, but it's delinquent type behavior.
Right. If we were analyzing this under graffiti, it probably qualifies, but the damages would be de minimis. If he were trying to sue them, it probably wouldn't go anywhere.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, see a judge. Did you make them clean it? It's
just. Yes, I battered them in order to do so.
Say what? You know, it's like, as everyone then gets really uncomfortable in court. Yeah. No, that was not the answer I wanted to hear.
Well, but yes, the kids are pretty clearly trespassing. I wanted to try to mention the one funny wrinkle about trespassing, which is that the intent required for most trespassing is not that you intended to trespass or that you intended to go on property that you knew wasn't belonged to someone who was trying to keep it separate, but just that you intentionally went on the property. So if somebody tossed you over the fence, you're not trespassing. But if you walked yourself over a property line, whether or not you knew it was someone else's property, that counts. In this case, they not only know that it's someone else's property, they know that it's causing the owner psychological harm when they do so.
Yeah, they're being little brats. I mean, they're adorable, but they're being little brats, and it's not okay.
Yeah.
Even though they do deserve a stern talking to.
Right.
And there's some
Go ahead.
No, you first.
Oh no, I was gonna transition to our next topic, but if you want to continue. So although we both agree that this is clearly trespassing, is there ordinarily parental liability for something as simple as going on your neighbor's yard or going on this man's construction yard?
It's gonna vary with the states. So simply going onto the construction yard, that's gonna, you know, get a, you know, parents involved because there's gonna be phone calls. But, you know, under the common law, there isn't parental tort liability for actions of a child. that's something we've added by, you know, statute at the state level,
mm-hmm.
because of kids behaving badly. And different states have different levels of, like, how much could a parent be responsible for damages by a kid. Some states it's $5,000 cap. Some states it's a $10,000 cap. In California, it's like $25,000, which means that somebody really screwed up bad and somebody was very, very upset. I don't know if they like took out a Picasso or something, but you know.
I just realized I have a personal story about this. I didn't remember it until just now. So I went to law school at Stanford, and at one point I pulled my car out in front of the dorm at Stanford Law School, and was packing some stuff to go visit a friend in Monterey. And as I was standing out there at my car, a truck rolls by with a group of teenagers, and they toss eggs at me in my car. I fortunately managed to get a quick look at the license plate as they drove by and got a good description of the car, immediately called the Stanford police. They eventually did find this group of kids, and it turns out, obviously, I was not an intentional target. They were just running around the neighborhood, including the law school, throwing eggs at cars. Of course, this is a neighborhood immediately next to Stanford campus, which has very expensive houses and very expensive cars. Mine was not. Mine was a very old Corolla. But these were eggs, and although it seems innocent, eggs can actually be a pain to clean off. They can cause serious property damage. They cracked some windows. And so it turns out that these kids, that when they eventually caught up with them, had caused thousands of dollars in property damage across the neighborhood. I think I did the right thing, and I told the police that if they apologized, I was not interested in pressing any charges or anything. But I assume their parents might have been on the hook from some angry Tesla owners.
Yeah, you know, all the hooligans of Palo Alto out there, or the, you know, the lower class of Atherton coming out to terrorize Stanford students. It's like, really? Really?
I know.
Okay, yeah, that's
but yeah, so I have personal experience with this, and those kids, their parents may have been on the hook for a significant amount of damages under California law.
Yeah. We're going to fire your maid because of what you did, Johnny.
Yeah, now you're going to have to clean your room, exactly.
Yes. See what you did. Yeah, they, talk about, that's privilege off the hook.
And, for sure.
You did the right thing calling on those, reporting those brats. But for our story, so.
Sorry, yeah.
No, that is great. So this is beyond eggs. So the version.
A little bit further for sure.
So Gravidon version 1, the tadpole form.
Oh, sorry, Gavidon. I don't think there's an R in there.
Oh, Gavidon. Big, white, looks like a big tadpole. Kind of makes squeaky noises when he walks. He's pretty
damn.
I know,
it's so cute.
It's just, and
he shuffles and makes little noises.
It's adorable, and
he just wants to nap.
Yeah, that he's like, he just shows up and, you know, curls up and goes to sleep. So naturally, they call in an airstrike, and it's just, you know, it's like you could just see them. It's like, okay, you know, like prepare for bombing, and it's like. Dude, is this?
they actually criticize Gavidon for being lazy. In my opinion, a lazy kaiju is the best kind of kaiju.
He's not rampaging. He's just taking a nap, and it's like he just wants to nap. And if you leave, he's like. He just walks around squeaking and then, you know, wants to nap. And it's hysterical because you see all these soldiers like who are in position like, what do we do? And the science patrol.
Is he just going to nap all day? When do we get to fight him?
You know, there's the communications officer, Fuji, who I will admit is super cute. And I'm sure boys have loved her for the last 50 years.
yes, she definitely is.
Yeah, it's like. Rock on. Like she's standing next to the guy who's the comic relief scaredy cat. Mm-hmm. And like, there's some big noise and like, he immediately grabs her because he's terrified. And the way she like throws his arm off her shoulder, and the look on her face is so priceless. I don't know if she's going to have an HR claim, because it's like, well, he was obviously terrified. It wasn't like he was copping a feel. He was scared for his life. He should get a talking to, but yeah.
Sounds like a potential topic for a blog post at some point. It's Fuji's potential Title IX claims.
Yeah, because there's a little of that on the first episode too, where she calls out the guy, excuse me. Yeah.
I know she's on the team, but she's still a girl.
just those moments of like, oh God. But she quickly called him out. Mm-hmm. And you'll see, I've seen a few more episodes than you. He, don't worry, she's in charge. Everything's okay. She knows. But yeah, it's like you watch, it's like, come on. But so we get the initial napping. They do have to bomb him. They take off part of his tail, which is like really unfortunate. And then eventually he like gets up and just like squeaks away walking and disappears as the cosmic rays disappear.
Yeah.
And everyone's kind of like bummed out. It's like, that's it. We
we expected more mayhem.
Big squeaky kaiju. That seems kind of cute.
And of course, the children feel exactly the same way.
It's seeing the kids like rally together again. This is great team building. They all are working together to like.
And they really just want to help the kid who drew it to make a better kaiju.
Like, it's like, this is where the mixed messages really, really are tough to ignore. It's like,
yeah.
So he was initially kind of mocked, but now they rally to him. So that's good.
Yeah. But, yeah. We have to set aside the initial mocking, of course.
So they learn to get past that and they accept him. Okay. Positive, positive. But they're now making the means of our destruction. And right. Like they, that's a problem. Again, so we're still going to look at parental liability. And the way this comes in with version two, it's like, yeah, he's bigger and theoretically meaner. But the science patrol realizes, I got an idea. Let's just let him nap. And so they do that. And it's hysterical because this is where we start seeing the shelter in place, because all these like people in downtown Tokyo are in their offices just looking at this big napping kaiju. Yep.
As he does nothing but snore. They mentioned that the buildings in Tokyo shook from the snoring.
And Cap makes the comment about all it takes for him is to nap or to sleep and our economy will crumble. And,
yes, so there are some clear analogies here. fearing economic catastrophe, the special science team then decide, a special science search party then decide that more drastic action must be taken, potentially and knowingly at the cost of human lives.
And the kicker with this is they actually discussed maybe we should go find the drawing and like wash it off. And like, but that's
in my humble opinion, in bureaucracy at its finest, the captain points out that the special science search party is not supposed to go around cleaning up graffiti.
And he's angry that it was even suggested. It's like, how dare you? And like, and like he makes some comment about like, you know, no more idiotic ideas or something.
Yep,
along those.
Exactly.
it's like, dude, we just gotta like, it's a bucket of soapy water and a scrub brush and the crisis is over.
Right.
We're gonna have to like call in an airstrike. why are we
massive
here?
Human casualties, little hit to your dignity. I can understand why they did what they did.
It'd be like, you know, asking the National Guard to put on hazmat suits and start cleaning buses and trains. It's like, well, it might make us safer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Whoa, my one weekend a month was not this.
Yeah.
Fight.
But so bringing this briefly back to, I think, the parental liability aspect, although there's sometimes limits state by state on whether or not parents can be held liable for any acts, a lot of states will hold parents liable for reckless or malicious or willful acts. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like Georgia says willful or malicious, and other states have similar type language, like purposely marking upon, defacing in any way, or damaging property. That's Missouri, and their limit's $2,000. But again, it's that purposeful intent, and we got that here.
Yeah, so under this theory, the first time that the kids went out and drew the tadpole monster, I mean, no one knew that that was going to be the effect. They certainly didn't. So probably not going to be held liable for the, you know, 2 minutes that it takes with the sponge and some water. But the show makes amply clear that by the second day, the kids know exactly what's going on. And they, in fact, observe on the second day that the drawing come to life. They get up early, uncharacteristically early, to watch it happen. So there is zero doubt in their minds by the third day. So day two, probably day three, definitely.
And let's talk about the positive reinforcement, you know, because they all line up. The scene's glorious because the kids are saying, you need to try harder, you know.
It's I gave you life. Try a little harder for me.
And like the one girl who's with the group says, and I don't know if this was cultural or what, but say like, you know, it's like, I'm a girl and my mother's very strict with me, and I am here. You owe it to me.
Type so our viewers who are listening and cannot see me may not know. I too have an Asian mother, and I think that that was an accurate comment. She made a great personal sacrifice.
good to know. oh God, it is. It's wonderful. It's absolutely hysterical to watch. And I'm sure kids in 1960, whatever, were just like giddy with this. Because it is super endearing.
It is very endearing, although they do explicitly ask him to act more violently.
Yeah, and that would be, that would be bad. That would be very bad.
I think there is no jury in the world that wouldn't find that to be willful or malicious. So, I'm pretty confident that if the parents of these kids were ever brought into court, there is no way that they are getting off the hook for the second or the third day damages. Although on the second day, I don't think there were much damages.
No, and on the third day, well, the second day is the worst because that's when he goes downtown.
Oh, that's right. That's right. So there's all the lost economic opportunity there, all the activity that was ceased.
Yeah, the number of businesses that get shut down. So even if you capped each one at, say, like the California level at $25,000 or like the Missouri level at $2,000, you multiply that by all the businesses in downtown Tokyo. That's bad.
It spells the number of bankrupt families. Let's just put it that way.
And if they have umbrella coverage, you know, their insurance is going to get maxed out pretty quick. Boy, howdy, that would be bad.
But that's right. On the third day, for some reason, our friendly napping Gavadon actually moseys himself outside of city limits, it looks like. And it's like by a train track in a field.
Yeah, and he's by the aqueducts, just like hanging out. I mean, it's probably a good place to nap. He's just like,
yeah.
There's a good breeze.
Peaceful sound of running water nearby.
I'm just going to lay down right here and curl up in a little ball and just snooze away.
Which is obviously when you have to bring out the line of tanks.
it's like, guys, wrong response. I mean, you like your knowledge of the law of war is great. Is that at all proportional? So there's a sleeping monster, so we send in the tanks.
Not to mention, this isn't something that I think I'm prepared to get into in too much depth, but would there be liability if the monster was only going to nap and instead they caused it to rampage?
Yeah, it's, that is, you know, it changes the dynamic, because, like, no, we made a monster that napped. He was boring. Then you guys came in and shot at him.
Right. Is that not a superseding cause?
I would argue it is.
At least on the third day, when they decide, despite the fact that they know that they can erase the drawing, to nonetheless go into battle.
Yeah. Oh, God. Could have been handled with soap and water, but no. Send in the tanks.
As in right now, we could handle this with soap and water. Anyway.
Yeah, just 20 seconds of soap and water and vigorous hand washing. Yeah. Coming. Don't cough with your mouth open into a crowd. You know, little things like that. Or maybe go to the gym or go swimming, you know, and start. Did you want to take out the U.S. Senate? What the hell, Rand? But I digress.
He's a true believer in small government.
Yeah, it's a. That's a new way to do it. My brother texted. He's like, could the Senate flip control to the Democrats? Because the Democrats are meeting by video conference and the Republicans are meeting in person.
And I think five of them have currently self-quarantined, is my understanding, of the Republicans, Senate Republicans, I mean. But we digress from the world of Ultraman, which is much, much more uplifting than the world that we live in currently. Although the next topic does bring us to it's the most topical topic that we got, so it does bring us back to the real world quite a bit, which is the shelter in place that occurred on the second day when Gavadon was simply napping, but it shut down all functions in, was it Tokyo? There, it was definitely a large city.
Yeah, it's like Tokyo hits the snooze button, and,
right. You know,
again, there's footage of, like, all these guys in, like, you know, the white shirts with the ties, like, looking up out of the window. I mean, the scene's beautiful. I mean, like, it's, I mean, the Suit Nation and downtown and the editing with live action, it's beautiful. Hats off to the production.
I agree. This was a great episode. But so it does ring a little close to home, or does hit a little close to home right now, especially for you, Josh. Yeah. So at the time that we're recording this podcast, at least 1 in 4 Americans are under shelter in place orders. So this is a timely episode to be discussing right now. And I'm sure a lot of our legal geek listeners are very curious about what is the law surrounding a shelter in place, because it's not explicitly brought up in the episode, but we can assume that there is a shelter in place since no one is going outside and people are stuck in their offices watching Gavadon nap. I'm sure most of them would love to be home with their families during the crisis, but they're stuck where they are. I'll just say as a caveat, I'm not an expert in Japanese law, and of course Ultraman is set in Japan, and it has a unitary government instead of a federal government, so the analysis would of course be quite different, and given the Japanese's experience with natural disasters and such, I'm sure that what they were doing was legal under Japanese law. But for purposes of the discussion, and for those of people who are listening from the United States, people may be curious about whether or not you could do similar things here. And I mean, obviously, we have a lot of people already living under shelter-in-place orders. Is it legal? And the answer to that question really depends on what part of our government is issuing the order. So right now, all the shelter-in-places are coming from states and cities. And the cities, of course, derive their authority from the states. It's granted to them under state laws or state constitutions. And the answer for whether or not those shelter-in-place orders are legal is pretty simple under our system of laws, and that's because under our constitution, the states retain general police power. So the analogy that I've heard in a number of from a number of different law professors in a number of different contexts, is that there is a French rule and a German rule. And under the French rule, all that is not expressly prohibited is permitted. And under the German rule, all that is not expressly permitted is forbidden. and so for states, because they retain general power to do everything the government did before we all agreed to the Constitution, they generally have the power to do things unless their constitutions or their state laws or the Constitution says they definitely can't do it. So, and there's a long history of states and cities enacting shelter in place, enacting quarantines. There's actually a little bit of an unfortunate history on the quarantine side. So,
And it's local to me, so I can talk about that.
Yes.
So, on the quarantine side, which is different than shelter in place. So, United States Supreme Court 1902, and this was the Campaign Française de Navigation et Vapeur v. Louisiana State Board of Health. And in the opinion states that from an early day, the power of the state to enact and enforce quarantine laws for the safety and protection of the health of their inhabitants has been recognized by Congress is beyond question. Well, that's Louisiana. Let's pivot over to San Francisco. And we have all the horrible nativist Chinese Exclusion Act, horrible people that were at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th, with the Chinese Exclusion Act. And there was an issue of the bubonic plague was found in San Francisco.
Right, this is the literal black plague that wiped out a third of Europe.
Yeah, so, and like the autopsies did show that, yeah, it really was the plague. Now, going after rats and all that stuff, that should have been the response. Instead, because we had a bunch of racist leaders at the time, they decided, let's just cordon off this 12 blocks where that's Chinatown, where all the Chinese Americans live, and we'll just corral them all there and just keep them there. And say white people who live on the border, we'll just draw the line around them. Well,
as one does.
Yeah. Well, let's just put this out there. That was racist. That was, and in one of the earliest civil rights opinions that gets into this, it's Circuit Judge William Morrow struck down the quarantine as unreasonable, unjust, and oppressive, and in violation of the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution. Mm-hmm. And that's the Ju Ho v. Williamson case, 103 F10.
From 1900.
Yeah, from 1900. And it's, there are a lot of beautiful quotes because it's, again, it's one of those early civil rights cases.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are times when we'll have to enact a quarantine. And we're not there yet. But you can't go, you can't target people because of their nationality. And right now there are hate crimes taking place because when politicians start saying Chinese virus, we get evil, horrible human beings who are out there attacking people of Chinese ancestry. And they, you know, there are a lot of legal things that I could say, but I think the most basic is they can go to hell. That what they... It's just, it's inhuman, it's un-American, and it's despicable. So go to hell. That aside, be better than that. We're the good guys. We're the ones who are supposed to liberate concentration camps and save people. And when refugees need help, we're the ones who are supposed to be there. So step up and be an American. Don't be some pig. But that's just me, and I'm kind of old-fashioned.
And if I can add to that, we've had the lovely experience of Japanese internment and some pretty horrible Supreme Court law in Korematsu. And although the opportunity has never arisen to expressly overturn Korematsu, it has been spoken of in many Supreme Court cases as it is now bad law. It is no longer good law. And that's it's kind of the Ju Ho v. Williamson was, I think, surprisingly on point when it comes to, you know, Korematsu may not have been good law under the existing precedent, even at the time. Because, of course, the problem with both of those is that, you know, the states are empowered to do quite a bit, but they have, including a lot of stuff like quarantines, which are, you know, under just the chance that you have been, or belief, it could be erroneous, but belief that you've been exposed to a dangerous contagion, we are prospectively confining you, taking away your personal liberty. It's a pretty severe penalty with very little evidence needed to show up front. But nonetheless, the government still cannot do these things without compelling interest, and it cannot do these things if it's not geared towards that compelling interest in a sensible way. And then finally, the government definitely can't do things arbitrarily or discriminatorily. So in Ju Ho, as in Korematsu, you know, whether or not the you know, people who had been to China might have been potential carriers, or whether or not Japanese Americans, and it turns out they weren't, but let's assume that they were even slightly more likely to be saboteurs, you still needed to narrowly tailor that. So targeting third and fourth generation Japanese, or targeting a 12 block district that is Chinatown, is just not going to pass constitutional muster under any test.
No, no, God, no. It's just, you need things like, if it's law, I mean, of course, everything's law, but for dealing with like a criminal type prosecution, like in like trying to deal with espionage, it's like you need some probable cause of some kind, some reasonable suspicion. My paternal grandfather in the early 1930s, you know, went to Cal Poly, and he had a roommate that was a Japanese exchange student. And so this is early 1930s. His roommate liked to go take pictures of the oil rigs off the coast. Papa thought that was weird, but but he didn't call the FBI because it was the early 30s. It was a very different, you know, we weren't at war yet. But that would be the type of thing to go like, oh, that's weird. Why is he hanging out at the harbor taking, you know, with a journal watching like when ships go in and out? That would be a reason to go investigate. Now we're going to round people up because of their nationality. That's not how we do business in America.
Right. And it wasn't even nationality is the point, because they were third and fourth generation Japanese Americans. It's difficult to argue that their nationality was Japanese. At that point, it's just ethnic or racial.
It was just racial discrimination, pure, clean, and simple, of people being afraid and doing stupid things because they were afraid. And
yes.
Or good people letting something bad happen because they're afraid. That's beyond the scope of this kaiju incident.
Yes, and I was going to say, as often happens in our podcast, when we get to potentially dark parts of the law, I will try to bring us back into some more fun discussions. But so to get back into the legal discussion about shelter-in-place orders and quarantines in the United States, so I think we both agree that there is almost certainly the power in the state and local authorities to tell you to stay in your home or to quarantine you because they suspect that you've been exposed to COVID-19, or in this case, they suspect that you might go out and draw kaiju, not quite sure, but in any event... there's a much harder question when it comes to, and there's been a lot of talk about whether or not the federal government in the United States could order a nationwide shelter in place. And there are statutes authorizing the federal government to quarantine people and things like that. But it's a lot less clear because, as I mentioned before, the federal government operates under the German rule, unless it is expressly permitted for them to do something, to give them a power to do something. They can't do it. It's the exact opposite of the states. So every time that the president or Congress tries to do something, they have to source it somewhere in an express provision of the Constitution. And it's not exactly clear, the Congress, not the president, Congress could perhaps suspend the writ of habeas corpus, but even a charitable reading of the suspension clause probably doesn't include this, since it does specify cases of rebellion or invasion. I think it's difficult to argue that extends beyond a national security threat and just extends to public welfare threats of any kind. I do want to emphasize, the president cannot suspend the writ of habeas corpus. It's Congress that does. So probably not that. We could do a whole nother blog post or podcast about whether or not the Commerce Clause would authorize it. I don't want to get too in the weeds on that just because it's a long, complicated topic. My opinion is that it can't, especially when it comes to shelter in place. So, because shelter in place is essentially you're trying to regulate all human activity and trying to say you cannot leave your home, you cannot go visit your friends, you can't go to a park, you can't go to a restaurant. And some of those things that I just listed are dubiously commercial, like visiting your friends and family. And if it were ever interpreted that the Commerce Clause covered that, it would be interpreting the Commerce Clause to be so expansive that it's no longer any limitation at all. So that's just my opinion on that. Don't take that to court, anyone.
Yeah, the Stanford grad said, yeah, no, no. Yeah, there's... Wow. Yeah, there's so much there because, you know, the state interest of like, hey, we don't want the plague coming back. You know, like the CDC, like in the current situations, like we could have 200,000 to over 1 million people die.
Yeah.
That's justification for governors to say, pump the brakes, spring break is off.
Yeah.
Don't be an idiot. Stay home and let's flatten the curve now, as opposed to bring out, you know, having somebody say, bring out your dead being a regular thing that happens in our country. So, no.
Yeah, the great thing about spring break and Mardi Gras and all that is that they're annual holidays. They happen every year.
And if you stay alive, you could enjoy it later.
Exactly.
So
you could have many more to come.
It's like, I'm bummed WonderCon got postponed. However,
yeah,
it will come back. And that's going to be okay as long as we're all here. So, yes.
The last thing that I'll note about the topic of shelter in place and quarantine and the law thereof is that there is theoretically still a due process limitation. There are practical problems with ever adjudicating that. So I do not take any of this as legal advice, but I certainly am not suggesting to anyone that they violate a shelter in place or quarantine order. And one of the practical obstacles to ever adjudicating it, even if you think that, you know, you're being asked to shelter in place or quarantine, arbitrarily or inappropriately or whatnot, it's just because, you know, shelter in place and quarantines are by their very nature usually quite short. We're talking like a couple weeks, usually maybe a month. And it's really hard to get in front of a court that quickly. So by the time you actually get a ruling from that court, not just get in front of a judge or teleconference in front of a judge, you'll probably already have been released. So at that point, your only relief is money damages, not injunctive, because the issue is no longer that the court will order your immediate release. The issue is, are you owed any money? And then the problem with are you owed any money is qualified immunity. Was it clearly against established law for your governor to have ordered you to stay in your home? And at this point in time, the answer to that is almost certainly not. So there's serious problems with ever adjudicating even something as basic as a due process challenge, although in theory, you still have a right to a certain amount of process before you're deprived of your liberty.
Well done. And there was a lot there because, again, we don't want to have mass death happening. Like today, day of this recording, like we just crossed over 100 people dying from, COVID-19. And that's terrifying. Mm-hmm. And
I believe it's actually a little over 500 now. So,
okay. Oh, God. You know, again, it's just... scary things happening. And it's like, I live in San Jose, and Santa Clara County has, you know, really ramped up because, like, we don't want this to continue. And on the bright side, people all are answering the call. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't like mobilizing for war. We have to stay on the couch or work from home.
Yeah.
Ooh, you know, like the supply chain's not broken. People are getting Amazon deliveries just a little later. And you can still go to the store and get food. So it's not like, longer, like, will we be able to pick crops? Like, you know, there's stuff like that that we have to address. But, you know, if we're able to knock this down now,
And ideally, the government does pass some relief. I know there may be people listening who are worrying about how they're going to pay for bills if they can't work right now and things like that. But in the grand scheme of things, this is still potentially, if we all pitch in, not the worst crisis to hit the United States.
I applauded Senator Romney coming out. Give everyone a grand. And there were like multiple different versions of that. One congressman said $4,000. And I agree with that number because a grand will help with rent maybe for 1 month. And, you know, and with respect to the distinguished gentleman from Utah, that might be fine in Utah for a house payment. In the Bay Area, where you need to make six figures in order to, qualify for having a roommate.
Stanford Law School does not do guaranteed graduate housing after the first year. I was not one of those lucky people who got to stay on campus after the first year. I can attest to the fact that $1,000 a month would not be enough to get by.
Nope. So again, that $4,000 number, that would be better. But here's the thing, going outside would be like waking up the sleeping kaiju, and you don't want to do that.
You may feel like you want to do that. You may feel like your life purpose is to do that.
Don't go poke him with a stick. Let him nap. And when the solar rays, cosmic rays go away, he's going to dissolve. That's where we are right now. So let him snooze. Don't send in the tanks. That's going to make a bigger mess.
I do trust that people listening right now are probably more likely than others to be observing these orders, in particular because I feel like geeks such as ourselves are particularly well equipped to find indoor activities. If I were a kid right now and school were canceled, I would be reading so many books, playing so many games. I would be having a pretty good time.
Yeah, it's like, oh, look, I can now catch up on the comics I haven't had time to read because of work.
Exactly.
There's no shortage of things to do for, again, abnormal amount of attorneys or introverts who grew up reading comics and watching sci-fi and playing video games. So we're good. we're totally fine. It's everyone else. It's, call family, check in with folks, mm-hmm.
All those young people out there, FaceTime your parents, because if people, especially if they live alone, it can be pretty isolating.
Yeah, that does get, you could start talking to sock puppets if you're not careful. But that aside, don't go wake up the kaiju. Let them nap. Which is why this episode was just super timely. We went straight to this one of, this strikes a chord.
Yes.
So Nari and I, we do plan to get to other Ultraman episodes and maybe some Ultra Q. And hopefully the Netflix series as well, because there's a lot. That's so good. but I love Godzilla and Gamera, and I was, I just never had the opportunity as a kid to watch Ultraman because it wasn't on.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't hunt for it on Blu-ray until Mill Creek came out with the special edition with Ultra Q and Ultraman. I got that as a Christmas gift to myself, and man, I love it. So I'm glad that we can.
And
share
I am currently loving it too. I will also share that I had heard of Ultraman, but only because I have read and seen Ready Player One. But I am very grateful now to more fully understand exactly how important that reference was.
It's as my good friend Matt Weinhold described it. It's like everything the 7-year-old in you wants, and it's like, yeah, okay, that's okay. So they got spaceships and airplanes, and I'm impressed by the technology that they're using with the terms, because we've talked about vertical takeoff and landing aircraft,
mm-hmm.
that's a thing. It's like, okay, so they're talking about that. Some of the other language that they're using, it's like, oh, that's still common. We still get that, and that's adorable. But whether it's the Class A or the Class B uniforms, or sometimes the way they break the fourth wall, and sometimes they stay strict with keeping it.
Yes.
It's a very endearing show, and so if you haven't seen it, highly recommend it, because it's I feel good about life.
And it's classic science fiction that will certainly improve your repertoire of understanding the history of this wonderful subject.
Oh, that's, again, so much fun. So with that, Nari, thank you. And it's so awesome the way you just go I'll go watch Ultraman, and you do it, and you study it, and you write a scholarly article on it. God bless you, that rocks. Yes, you're the kaiju lawyer I always go to. And it's after we did Denver, and it was Denver was just Nari and I, and we clearly had a good time. And so it was, our friend Bethany came up to us afterwards, and like, she was going to San Diego with us. And she said, like, I want in on the Godzilla panel. She's like, that was way too much fun. I was like, you're on. And here we are. So, yes, love this. So for everyone, you know, we're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google, Spotify, wherever you listen to us, please leave a review. Please share the episode.
Please subscribe.
Yes. We also have our own Patreon where we have some additional content. So check that out. And I just do $5 a month. So that way it's for an Of Council member, because, you know, I don't want to get into, you know, like different tiers and all that stuff, or, you know, that's just weird. So again, just flat fee. That's the type of billing model I prefer for the service. And everyone, first off, I hope David Latt from Above the Law makes a full recovery. Article just came out that he's getting some experimental treatment. So again, wish David the best. And everyone, stay home. Don't go out. Stay home. Watch Ultraman, watch Godzilla, watch Gamera. You have no reason to leave the house unless you need to go get food or care for a loved one. If you can work remotely, great. If you have a necessary job where you have to go in, be careful. But stay home. So with that, thank you all, and we'll see.